Hey, you. That's right. I'm talking to you. I'm Charles Cadenhead, and I'm from the Mostly News podcast, and you're listening to a special feature of Buffy Between the Lines.
Hello and welcome to the commentary for Buffy Between the Lines Episode 3, Never Go Up Against a Sorcerer When Death Is on the Line. I'm Kevin Cummings, your host, and joining me tonight I have Brian Brown, who played Giles. Brian is part of the Slice of Sci-Fi, Winging It 3D, Cover to Cover, and Kick-Ass Mystic Ninjas podcasts. Also have Clay Robeson. Clay is Angel in the series, and he is also a producer for More on Life, an associate producer for the San Francisco Improv Festival. Aaron Moore, who plays Faith Forrest, lives in Chicago with two girls, two female cats, and a husband. Feel the girl power. And Gwendolyn Jensen Woodard is a writer for the series. She is also the announcer and a director. So let's start with Aaron. Aaron, you are also connected with the Game Master show, and you did some recording in front of them. Tell us about that.
Yes, I did my second recording in front of all of the crew of the Game Master show, which is a bunch of guys. They kind of sat there rather meekly while I was trying to play Faith, which was a big stretch for me because Faith is not a natural personality type for me. I'm usually that good kind of reserved girl, whereas Faith is definitely a bad girl, which makes it interesting for me because now I'm really playing a bad, slutty kind of girl, and that's fun. So it was a little difficult to get in front into that character right in front of everybody, because even in role-playing games, I never play the slutty character, so I was really having to slut it up in front of a lot of people, and that was kind of difficult.
So sort of getting in touch with your inner slut.
Yes.
And you were sort of a late addition to the cast.
Yes, the original Faith was not returning in her materials quite on time. And I had wanted to play Faith very badly, partially because of the whole dichotomy and the change of personality. But when auditions were being held, I was in graduate school and very extremely busy, and I couldn't really get my audition tape in. However, a little bit later, Tabs contacted us and said, "Hey, are you still interested? Because we're having problems and we need somebody to help us out." And I'm like, "Yes, of course I want to help you." So, unfortunately, I got to play Faith.
And here you are and doing a marvelous job of it. Let me go over to Gwen for a minute. Gwen, you wrote some of the episodes. In fact, you wrote the episode that we're talking about tonight. How did you come to be a writer on the series?
Well, actually, I came to be a writer because Tabitha put a thing up on her journal saying, "Hey, I have this idea. Who's interested?" And I was one of the several people who went, me, I'll do it. And when they said they wanted to do a Giles-centric episode, I basically jumped at the chance, him being one of my two favorite characters on the series.
So, now writing's kind of a solitary thing. You're in a room, you're alone, you and a keyboard, and you're pounding this out. And you know, I mean, obviously in your head you're hearing the characters. But then you got to hear people actually record it. How was that for you as a writer to hear people recording what you'd written?
It was awesome. For the most part, people really embodied exactly what I was thinking. I tended to listen to their files as they turned them in, and for a couple of people, I'd poke them and go, "Hey, you did a great job doing blah, 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 blah." And it was great to hear it come to life and make it be more than just the words on the page.
So let's talk to the sort of subject of your writing there. Brian, you played Giles, of course. You have for the three episodes now and through the rest of the series. How did you get that role?
Well, it was interesting because a good friend of mine, Summer Brooks, who's also one of my co-hosts, put out the call that saying, "Hey, they're doing a Buffy fan show and they're looking for voice talent. And I've always wanted to be a voice actor or do a radio or an audio drama." And I said, "Hey, this is fantastic. You know, it's very different from anything else I've done." So I put in my three things. I put a small, a medium, and a large part in. And a few days later, I got an email back saying, "Hey, could you read for these other three parts I would have never considered doing?" And I did, and soon after that, it was probably little time, they said, "Hey, we want you to be our Giles." And I was floored because here I knew I was going against anybody from around the world you know, actual Brits who are doing this accent. And I'm like, I do a passable one, I think, but obviously the tone and how I deliver is, you know, very caught people's eye, ear, I should say, not eye.
So how did you come by that accent? I mean, do you, you know, do you pour yourself some tea, or sort of what is it that you do to get into the character?
I really honestly went back and I watched the Buffy episodes, and I really specifically watched between seasons 5 and 6 to kind of get the idea where Giles is at, you know, and how his world has fell apart. I mean, honestly, when you think about it, he's now no longer needed to be the Watcher. You know, his Watcher's dead. So what do you do from that? And that's kind of how I got it. And I, you know, I have a great ear, I think, for accents. And so I just kind of mimicked what he had.
Has playing the role changed your feelings or thoughts about the character at all?
It has, because I always have thought the character was much more than a much more central character than a lot of the other ones, because he's the core for a lot of it. He started this with Buffy, and it's always been a constant, and he's been the adult. And as the series goes on, he's no longer the adult. He's really almost a peer to these kids who have grown up. And it gives me a greater appreciation for the character and how he's evolved.
Now, I've got a note here from Tabitha, who, of course, is the you know, our very own sort of Joss here. She says that you also played a part in a crowd scene in episode 2.
No, she's kidding. She's messing with you. I didn't actually do anything like that. This is the first time I've ever done anything with this group of people, and it's been wonderful so far.
Excellent. Let's talk to Clay for a minute here, because Clay, in addition to playing Angel in the series, and I note Guy 1 in the Halloween episode, you are also one of the sound editors.
What was the question?
Tell us about being a sound editor.
Oh, tell us about being a sound editor. It was totally unintentional, actually. I kind of just made the offer to Tabs and Kim that if they needed anything, I would be there to help out. And so they, at some point they came to me and said, well, hey, come on in. We actually need some extra folks to help get some of these episodes off the ground. And so I dove in, and I think I ended up editing probably 8 or 10 scenes from episode 2.
Did you have sound editing experience before, or was this kind of learning on the job?
Not sound directly. I've been editing a video sketch comedy show we're just getting ready to release our 3rd season. So it's been about 3.5 years now. It's similar in some ways and very, very different in others, because you don't have expressions, facial expressions, and different angles to work from. So you're dealing specifically with the voice, and you have to rely very heavily on sound effects.
So walk us through what that process is like. You, of course, the actors are recording a lot of their lines independently. Mm-hmm. Or some group recording sessions, but a lot of them come into you just as files full of lines. How do you assemble that into something that sounds like everybody was in the same room?
For me, I get the files in, and the first thing we do on all of them is clean them up. You make sure you get rid of any ambient background noise that's in there, and it helps to make everyone sound at least a little closer to being in the same place, because you don't have a hum in one spot and you know, birds singing in another. The key, I think, to it, though, is keeping your volume levels balanced, and getting my secret is just kind of panning each person to a little bit of a different point in the room, so you can actually, if you close your eyes, hear the voices coming from slightly different locations, and it adds a little level of realism to it. But you've got all of these individual sound files. You kind of overlap them and listen to the multiple takes and try and pull the best lines for each take out of it to see, you know, which one you think is expressing the script the best way, or is expressing what's coming up the best way.
So for 10 minutes of finished audio, how much time are you investing?
For 10 minutes of finished audio, it can take anywhere, I'd say, an hour upwards to 4 hours, depending on how many takes there were. And the level of sound effects needed for the scene, I think that's probably the most difficult part, is finding the right effects for the scene.
And what are you editing in for the techies out there? What software do you use?
The majority of the sound editors use Audacity. which is an open source program. It's very free and very awesome. And occasionally, I also work in Adobe Audition because I'm just used to it. I work with the Adobe products on More on Life to do the video editing, so it's a little easier for me.
Now, you're actually, as we noted in the opening, you're an associate producer for the San Francisco Improv Festival. You know, this sounds like it's the opposite of improv.
It is, but that's the beauty of being able to go back and forth between them, because sometimes you just want to do something a little scripted, and you want to go ahead and create something that you don't have to worry about it being not funny, because someone else wrote it and it already is, and it takes the pressure off of you. It's the same thing with our sketches. They're all pre-written for More on Life, so it's a nice dichotomy where some of the time the funny's on your shoulders and some of the time it's not.
Excellent. Talking about the script, I want to just kind of go around the cast for a minute and ask folks what their favorite part of the episode was. Let's go back to Aaron. As you read the episode and then, of course, as you played in it, what were your favorite part of it?
I really have to say a lot of Xander's lines are always spot on for me, and I find them to be just as filled with comedy as they're supposed to be. So I really like all of the dialogue, and specifically Xander.
Okay, Gwen, that's probably not a fair question to ask you, so we're going to have you wait for a minute and come back to you. It's all
okay,
right? Brian, your favorite part of the episode?
Oh, I think my favorite part of the episode was the scenes between Ethan, Rain, and I. Those were well written and got the gist of the characters across, you know, what Giles was like and what Ethan was like and how they interacted. I think that was my favorite parts of the scenes out of the episode.
Now, Giles spends a lot of this episode trapped in his own head, essentially. Was there any particular challenge in playing that?
Yes, there was. There was a couple of the things I had to do, like as evil Giles versus good Giles, which is kind of fun to do. And it was a challenge, you know. How do you make Giles evil? Because he's generally a good guy all the way around.
Okay, Clay, how about you? What was your favorite part of the episode?
As an audience member and a sound editor, the best part of the episode for me was the whole Ethan cursing Giles scene. It was brilliantly written, and the gentleman playing Ethan did a phenomenal job with it. But as an actor, I loved reenacting killing Jenny Callender.
Which sort of brings up an interesting question, because that overlapped the series some. So was there a particular approach you took in doing that?
I watched the scene about 40 times before I tried to record it.
burned a hole right through the DVD, huh?
Basically, yeah. I didn't want to mimic David Boreanaz, but I wanted to get as close to his intonation as I possibly could so that it kind of, sort of, might have sounded like him a little bit.
Excellent. So, Gwen, what was your favorite part? I mean, writers, you know, it's sort of like asking Mom who her favorite kid is. They're all your favorite. But, you know, what was your favorite part of the episode?
Well, I would have different ways of looking at it. As a writer, my favorite part of the episode was trying to delve back into Giles' brain and finding what really could make him feel bad and push him down. Listening to it, my favorite part has to be the opening part with the dragon and the snappy dialogue back and forth. I would listen to that and couldn't stop laughing, even though it was all my own writing. So, yeah, those are the two parts that are really my favorite. And then on top of it, Ethan's one of my other favorite characters. So the Giles and Ethan pairings both times were just phenomenal, listening to it and doing it.
Now, that raises an interesting question in my mind. You talked about, you know, the snappy dialogue. Everybody kind of wishes that they were, you know, that character who'd come up with the off-the-cuff lines. But even when you're sitting, you know, writing, it's hard to be funny all the time. Did you, you know, what was your secret for coming up with the snappy dialogue?
Rewriting. Some of the time. Some of the things just came. I've watched a lot of Buffy and a lot of Angel repeatedly, and some of them, just knowing Xander and Spike and knowing how they talk to each other, just came. And others of them was rewriting. Does this sound better? Does that sound better? Bouncing them off my husband, that kind of thing.
Is there something in particular that you do to approach the writing? Do you have rituals that you observe, or a special place that you write, or a, you know, preferred beverage, or what is the process like?
Usually when I sit down to write, because I write fiction as well as doing this type of stuff, I usually have music playing, and something to drink, and then I just sit down and I go for writing whatever it is I'm writing first, get it all done at once, then go back and edit and fix whatever the problem is and go on. But get my thoughts out first. And that's usually the best way to get it in there.
And for folks who might be listening and obviously, you know, haven't had the privilege of seeing the script, how long is the script when you're done for an episode of Buffy Between the Lines?
They vary. I think this one was 30-some pages. I don't remember exactly. There are things in the script that were added after I turned it in that did help make it better. But I think overall it was about 30-some pages.
All right. I'm getting a note from one of the producers. Says 52 pages, actually, on this.
Okay.
You underestimated, but it's probably good we're not paying you by the page.
This is true. Paying?
We should note that everybody on the program is a volunteer for this. And Aaron, of course, you're one of our volunteers. I wanted to ask you here, you talked about how hard it was to do the lines in front of the cast from the Game Master show, but how about just in general doing lines on your own?
On my own, I've actually have done some voice acting for some video games, and I kind of learned a lot about how to act in that and using your body while still using, you know, your voice actually helps a lot. So when I was taking Faith's lines the second time, I kind of would mimic how I thought she would sit in a prison cell or in her, you know, the prison area, which would be in that kind of hunched over predatory kind of stance. And I actually sat in the chair kind of like I expected her to sit, and that helped. And even in front of the Game Master crew, which was kind of a little nervous, but I just made myself get over it.
Now, because we're going to get emails if I don't ask, what games?
It was Cobalt, Duel Masters Cobalt Blue was the one I did voice acting for, and my picture actually appears in Larry Magnum Cum Laude, which is the new Leisure Suit Larry game.
Right. I don't know if we even want to follow up on that.
I was a game tester for that. And I'm fully clothed, but I'm one of the Easter egg photos.
That's pretty awesome. Now, for Clay, before you come in to play the role, you talked about, of course, rerunning the one scene that was an overlap. But do you have any rituals, anything that you do to get ready for the performance?
I spend a lot of time talking in my deep voice before I go in and do the angel bits. It helps to remind me. I mean, my normal speaking voice is much higher pitched than Angel's is. And so I try and spend at least a good 15, 20 minutes with the deep voice on. And I've done some voice recording myself, too. So I've got a setup in the house where I've got the full upright microphone with the pop screen and stuff. And I try to be as animated as possible physically while I'm doing it as well.
Any projects that you want to plug that you've been part of?
Right now, that I've been a part of? I just did some voice work for The Plot to Kill Jesse James on the History Channel. That's probably the most recent thing. And then a couple commercials for some haunted houses in the Bay Area area. Yeah.
So they got Angel on the cheap to advertise for them.
Exactly.
How about you, Brian? You said that you watched it a lot, but any particular rituals, vocal exercises, sprints, stretches, what?
Well, actually, yes, I run around the block 5 times before I do it. No, nothing like that at all. Honestly, I sit down. A lot of times I'll listen to my old clips that I've recorded, kind of get the tone that I use. But honestly, for the most part, I don't have to do anything. I sit down, I read the dialogue a couple times through, and I just fall into the rhythm of how I think Giles speaks.
Now, Gwen, you're also a director on this series, and so, you know, we've kind of heard from the actors. From the director's standpoint, how do you direct people that are scattered across the world and sending you lines individually?
When we do the directing thing, we do basically what we're doing now. We do a Skype call, and it'll be the director, which is sometimes me, and whomever else is in the scene. I do it differently, I guess, than some people. I'll ask people if they have any questions, make sure they understand where their character is going, and then we do it together as a group. You know, we do the 3-2-1 action, and then basically it's playing off of each other. So although their lines get recorded separately, because they played off of each other, I think it helps the editing process, and then they all work well together that way. Was that the question you asked?
That was the question I asked. Did you have any experience with this kind of thing before you started?
Directing, not on an audio drama, but I had done directing in other areas. I had directed a few plays in the past and a couple of other things that happened in college that could have been considered plays were they not just for school.
So what do you think that the folks listening to this, the audience for Buffy Between the Lines, would be most surprised to find out about how this is put together or what goes in behind it? Clay, what do you think might surprise people to know?
I think the most surprising thing is how willing to work and put in time everybody is on this. I mean, there are no divas. There are no people who kind of get pouty about having to do work or having to turn something in. It's just everybody loves it.
Aaron?
I think the fact that we're all spread out and not in the same area and the amazing talent that is being created and pulled here.
Brian?
Well, I think the most surprising thing would be that most of us do this in our lime green thongs. Oh, wait, no. I think the thing that's really amazing is that, again, I would echo Aaron in that we are all over the globe and doing a Skype call with Nick, who's in England, as well as the folks that are like in Australia and then the U.S. So it's pretty amazing.
Gwen, we'll come back to you now.
Oh, okay. I think what most people, again, number one, yes, we're international. Number two, the guy that plays Xander is not Nicholas Brendon, which, you know, people keep asking us. And number three is that we really, it starts to form a family. We work well together, and it seems to work great. Plus, you know, the announcer is awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I should mention that the announcer has, in fact, cut promos and opens and closes for a lot of podcasters, and, you know, he's much to be commended for that.
I'm sure we'll let her know.
I'm sure we will. Speaking of Xander, where did we turn him up?
Through auditions, I believe.
Yeah, that's correct.
Just came in over the transom, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Now, having sort of knowing what you now know and knowing how much effort goes into this and how much work it is, do any of you have any, you know, regrets? Would you have backed out if somebody had said, hey, we're going to have you part of this amazing thing, but it's going to require, you know, 4 hours for 10 minutes of finished audio, and, you know, you're going to be writing in your pajamas and recording in your lime green thong and those kinds of things?
If I'd known about the lime green thongs, I would have been out of here so fast.
Brian, how about you? Any regrets? Oh, you're carrying a big part of the series.
I honestly don't. I mean, I'm already doing a lot of other shows, so for me, it's just putting it into my rotation of things I need to do, and it's not a problem. I mean, I'm very honored to be part of this project.
Now, you mentioned that you're part of a lot of other podcasts, so what's your secret? Do you not sleep?
Well, honestly, it's kind of funny. My wife is a very patient woman. She allows me to do many of these podcasts. And honestly, I usually record Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, and often Sunday. And so those are just the regular podcasts I do. And then I fit the Buffy stuff in between as I am able.
Aaron, how about you? How are you working this into your life? Because, of course, you're part of you know, the Game Master show. And, of course, you have a day job and everything.
My husband is, I would say, a podcasting fanatic, so he's really the one who pulled us all into podcasting, and when he saw this opportunity and knew I wanted to do it, he makes it happen a lot. He takes all the kids off of me and says, oh no, we're doing this, so he really supports me.
Outstanding. Clay, how are you fitting this in with your with all of your work and other obligations?
I don't sleep. that's probably the easiest way to do it. No, I actually really only sleep about 5 hours a night, just because I do so much stuff between the shows and the festivals and everything else. But I guess I'm a little manic that way. It helps to have more to do.
If you want to get something done, ask a busy man.
Exactly.
All right. Well, we're kind of coming up on the end of our time here. So just any final thoughts that you might have, Clay, anything that you want, you know, want folks to know about the series?
There's someday maybe Angel Between the Lines, and I'm hoping that they don't recast me. Well, I mean, so that I get to stay in the part.
All right. Brian?
I think that as the episodes go along, they get better and better, much like a fine wine. So if you didn't dig it from the beginning, you'll really get it really well along the line.
Aaron?
I'm actually just pleased there's more Buffy out there, because I was a big fan of the show, and I'm just pleased that there's more of it now.
Gwen?
The biggest thing I noticed was, you know, that listening to the episode, I felt my writing and the actors together just made the whole thing pop. I wasn't disappointed in any way, shape, or form, and I'm hoping that the listeners feel the same way. This came together great, and I'm hoping everybody likes it.
Well, thank you all for joining me again. Our guests tonight have been Brian Brown, Clay Robeson, Aaron Moore, and Gwendolyn Jensen Woodard, all members of the cast and crew of Buffy Between the Lines. We hope that you're all looking forward to the next episode as much as we are. I'm Kevin Cummings, and this is Buffy Between the Lines, Episode 3 Commentary.
Everything looks good from here.
In 2002, Firefly was canceled. Browncoats didn't take that line down.
You never lie down.
We organized.
How drunk was I last night?
Coordinated. Engaged in guerrilla marketing.
Make the signal.
And bought the DVD box set in such numbers that before too long, we found we'd done the impossible.
That makes us lady.
Serenity became a major motion picture. Now, in 2007, Browncoats are doing the impossible.
Okay, now I can't get down.
Again. Go to BigDamnSequel.com to find out how you can help get Serenity back on the big screen. BigDamnSequel.com.
The power in the voice can stop me.
Because Serenity 2,
think you're something smart,
is worth fighting for.
Do something right.
www.bigdamnsequel.com.
It says ringing. Won't this be fun for the editor?
I'm going to make Clay edit it.
Absolutely.
Damn it!
That's fine. Whatever.
I'm teasing.
Ringing.
I'm trying to keep quiet. Oh,
if I do edit it, I can make myself sound less stupid.
I have my +5 mouse of answering.